I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. Well, a slight change of subject here. How many of you have been following the story of the Zumba Madam? That's this 30-year-old Alexis Wright from Kennebunk, Maine, who's been charged with running a prostitution ring out of her Zumba dance studio. Trial is supposed to start in a couple of weeks. She and her 57-year-old married lover are charged with prostitution, and then, you know, they allegedly videotaped all these sessions with their clients while they were having sex with them. And so the videotapes have all become part of the case. So there's a little bit of a delay that now while they're deciding on what kind of evidence can be brought into the case. If you haven't been following it, I've got just the person for you to kind of fill you in on all the details. Journalist Bethany McLean wrote a piece for Vanity Fair and joins me now to sort out some of these details. Welcome, Bethany.
Thanks for having me.
I was a little bit slow to this case. I mean, I knew about it, but I wasn't really up on all the details. And I think one of the things that I found fascinating about your piece was that everybody in town knew what was going on. Absolutely everybody. There was no secret about what was happening in this Zumba studio.
I found that shocking, too. If you think about it, one of the unwritten laws of prostitution is that people do their best to keep what they're doing secret. And the really strange thing about Alexis Wright, or maybe I should say one of the strange things about her, is that she made no effort to keep it secret. You could Google her and find videos either under her name or very obvious aliases like Maine Zumba Queen. Everybody in town knew.
Yeah. So what's the theory behind the videotaping? Why did she videotape herself with her clients, her boyfriend or lover, whatever he was, with clients, and kept these meticulous records? What was behind that?
Well, there are a couple of different theories. One theory is that she was doing this for protection. Her accomplice, lover, alleged accomplice, I suppose, this guy Mark Strong, was both an insurance salesman and a licensed private investigator. And so one theory is that she was videotaping her clients and taking pictures of their license plates to make sure that they were who they said they were and to provide herself with some protection in the event something went wrong. You can pretty easily poke some holes in that. Another theory that a lot of people involved in the case think is that this was heading toward extortion and that the meticulous records were evidence so that she and Strong could go to these men and say, pay up or else. Now, their lawyers adamantly deny this and say there's absolutely no evidence of extortion. And that's true. But people who are watching the case say, what other reason could there be for all of this?
And this whole thing about how the names, the lists of people have come out, that the kind of the police department or is it something?
It's the Kennebunk Police Department. So another one of the very strange things about this story, and some would say satisfying aspects of the story, is that usually in prostitution scandals, only the usually woman prostitute ends up getting charged. But in this case, because of her meticulous record keeping and because of all those videotapes, the police have been able to arrest and charge the Johns as well. And there have been some very strange things about the way that's taken place because the Kennebunk Police Department is so small. They've said, well, we can only process a certain number of weeks. So the names have been dribbling out, which one lawyer involved in the case described as slow water torture, drip, 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 because every time the names are about to come out, the town has to reel again for who's going to be on the list.
And so originally, they were just...
Go ahead. They
were just giving the name, you know, John Brown. But then there were so many mistakes and mistaken identity or the wrong person. So then they had to start giving the middle initial, the address, which they obviously had in the first place, but they didn't do that.
Right. So there's been some really goofy things that have happened, and that's one of them. That I guess in order to protect the men's privacy, perhaps they decided they wouldn't release any identifying information other than the men's names. But because there was such a furious press interest in this case, press people started tracking people down, calling them at home, even showing up on one guy's doorstep saying, well, you're on the list. And the guy said, well, no, actually, I'm not. He just happened to have the same name of someone who was on the list. So then the police department started having to release more identifying information. It's a little bit Keystone Cops-esque.
Yeah, very. Well, according to your article, most of the people on these lists, ledgers, are from out of town. But were there local people who were caught up in this as well?
there are some local people, and that area of Maine is all small towns. So even if they were out of town, meeting out of Kennebunk, it's still very much a local story. But that is, you know, another of the strange aspects to this story is I think a lot of the media interest was because, oh, who's on the list?
Yeah,
could
right.
it be a Bush?
Yeah,
could it
yeah.
be General Petraeus? Could it be members of the Secret Service? Who knows? And it could still be anybody, but the cases have been kind of smaller and sadder than that. And it's become, I think, a story about rumor and innuendo and the way that can destroy people's lives and about the questions of justice and what's really fair in a situation like this.
I mean, this woman is quirky, to say the least, and a self-described sex addict. I mean, I just did a quick Google at your suggestion, by the way, in your article. And, you know, the first thing that comes up is she's in her dance studio nude, I mean, with videotaping herself. And it's like, what the? But she was married as well. She recently married. Was he in on it? Or did he know what was going on?
She was married just days before Mark Strong, her alleged accomplice, was arrested. So there's some speculation swirling around about the marriage. And yes,
that's allegedly a sham or something?
Yes, allegedly her husband could be found in some of the earlier videos, but he's been charged with nothing, so he's not involved in any criminal aspect of this.
So another sad part of this was it appears some of these men had regular relationships with Alexis Wright and actually thought of her more as a girlfriend. She was a partner to them, and you know, they were stunned to find out, you know, she was kind of in this with somebody else and the whole thing was a ruse.
That's one of the sadder stories that came out. I was told that this man really thought he was in a relationship with her because, as his lawyer said to me, well, the price she charged never changed as the things they did charge. So he went to her originally for massage and it became something else. And he supposedly, reportedly, didn't realize that this was
sure.
this was her business. And maybe that's impossible to believe, or maybe it's not. I've come to believe that self-delusion is one of the strongest qualities of human beings. So anything is possible.
Talking to Bethany McLean, who has written a piece for Vanity Fair on the strange case of the Zumba Madam. Bethany, what's the hang up now? Is it about it's not about the names, but is it about the videotape?
Well, there are a lot of questions about whether the videotapes can be admitted into the trials and then what that does. Some of the lawyers for the men who have been charged allege that their names should never have been released because they were victims too, victims of the invasion of privacy
yeah.
which Alexis Wright and Mark Strong were both charged with. And so one of the big questions is what happens to these videotapes? Are there other copies? Are they swirling around out there somewhere? So for the men who were involved, and again, some may find this satisfying, this is never going to be over for them because they're always going to have to worry that in 10 years those videotapes may surface online.
Have any of them surfaced yet?
They have not surfaced. Some of the lawyers involved have seen them, but they haven't surfaced publicly.
How many were there? Do you have any idea?
Well, so far, I haven't looked at the latest number. So far, about 65 men have been charged. There may have been a few more in recent weeks. So according to the police, she videotaped all her clients. So there were an awful lot of videotapes.
Wow. They said hours and hours and then a CD labeled, yeah.
Yes. One of the lawyers involved said that watching amateur porn is not what it's cracked up to be.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, part of this, we're, you know, there's some humor in this too, but, you know, you really wonder in the bottom line about prosecuting. I was just talking to Harvey Silverglade about prosecutorial overreach in the Aaron Schwartz case. I mean, is this such a heinous crime here? I'm really wondering. The worst part of it is maybe the videotaping.
Right. Well, it raises a lot of questions about our criminal justice system and about fairness and about crime in the eyes of the law versus what people suffer in the community. And what I mean by that, for most of the men involved, the fine for prostitution is somewhere around that for a speeding ticket or for illegal fishing in the state of Maine. But their lives are going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And more tragically, their families' lives are going to be destroyed. I mean, their kids have to go to school after their dad's name has been publicly released. So it raises a lot of questions about whether justice can ever really be fair. And you even look at Alexis Wright, and she is not likely. It's the prostitution, obviously, that draws all the media interest in this case and that, you know, has everybody in an uproar. But her most serious crimes in the eyes of the law were benefit fraud, because she continued to get some $10,000 in state aid, mainly food stamps, and that she wasn't entitled to because she wasn't declaring her income from prostitution. So her most serious criminal exposure is from this, not from the prostitution. So
yeah,
it makes you think about moral judgments versus criminal judgments, and
absolutely
raises a whole lot of questions about fairness.
Because as you point out, not only does she keep meticulous records about her clients, specific sex acts, how much each act was costs, and, you know, variable, and then what each client paid. So prosecutors could look right up and say, well, this doesn't add up to $8,000 a year. In fact, it adds up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. So they could see what her income was and know what she did or did not pay taxes on.
Right. So they used her records to say that she'd made about $150,000 from her activities, and she hadn't declared that on her tax returns. So that's why they went after her for benefits fraud. So, but it's just interesting to me that carries the most serious criminal exposure, whereas the interest in this case is obviously the other aspect of it. And it's just this funny gap between our perceptions of right and wrong and what the law views as right and wrong.
Were any women swept up in this, too? Because she talks about how she's, you know, has had rendezvous with women as well. Were any women on these videotapes that you know of?
Thus far, I'm sure there are other women on some of the videotapes, but thus far, no other women have been charged in the case. They weren't paying clients.
So,
although you never know. I won't say never until this is all over.
So a judge is taking this whole issue of right to privacy into consideration before they move ahead with the trial. And the prosecutors, I guess, are arguing, though, that you lose your right when you're in the middle of committing a crime. So they're saying that the people who were complaining about having the tapes being released were involved in something that was criminal, so they lose their right to privacy.
Right. So it's an interesting legal argument. Are you still the victim of a crime if you were also an accomplice to that crime? So the lawyers, obviously the defense lawyers, want to introduce the videotapes, or at least that's what I've been told, so they can, you know, say to the men, there you are. What did you think about this? Were you committing a crime? And it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out.
I was interested in that the defense attorneys actually want the tapes. I actually don't understand that.
Well, they want to be able to go to the men involved and say what did you think about this? Were you committing a crime, or did you think you were her girlfriend?
Oh,
so
I see.
I think that they're hoping that it'll in the case of Mark Strong, to say, did you ever see anything about my client being involved in this man on the stand? And the person will have to say, no, I had no idea this guy was involved, and that will somehow be exculpatory for Mark Strong.
I think it's going to be hard for 65 guys to claim that they all thought she was their girlfriend.
I think that might be difficult. I think that might be difficult.
All right.
But Mark Strong's lawyer did get a woman off. He's most famous
getting
a woman off, who shot her husband, I think, 16 times, and he at close range, and he was able to get her off citing self-defense. So lawyers can do miraculous things.
Well, I know there's been a lot of media attention on this, and there'll be more once the trial gets underway again. So Bethany McLean from Vanity Fair, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Top that, Callie.
Well, I was just going to say politics is heating up in the state. That's about as
not that hot.
No, not that hot, thank goodness. Talking to Linda Dorsina Foray about her decision to run for the state Senate in the special election.
All right. I'm Emily Rooney.
I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio.